Welcome to the Wanting It More podcast. I am your host, Jana Dentonhouse, and it's an absolute delight to have you here. I'm a marriage and intimacy educator, as well as a creator of the Wanting It More program, which has helped thousands of women who are married to men want and enjoy it more in the bedroom. You know, having low desire was something that I personally struggled with for years in my marriage, so I absolutely get it all. You are not alone. Just a heads up, I use all the words in this podcast, so if you've got little ears around or you're in a public setting, you may want to pop in some earbuds. I hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome back to the podcast. It is great to have you back. Today, Raina is joining us, and it seems like we're going to have a conversation about hysterectomies and bad church advice. So what an eclectic conversation, I'm sure. And as always, we're probably going to have so much information for you to feel not broken, not alone, and have a little bit of hope. So Raina, before we dive into it, do you want to do a little bit of an introduction?
Sure. Well, as we were just discussing prior to starting recording, I'm an Enneagram 3. So I always feel like I want to be doing my best job at everything. So, but yeah, I'm in my 40s. I've been married for almost 15 years, and we have an 8-year-old son. I used to be a teacher. Now I'm a IT director and work full-time from home, which so does my husband. That brings about its own set of challenges being 24/7 in a house together. But yeah, and I'm currently in the program. And so I'm super excited to come talk about what got me here and how it's been and all that good stuff.
That's wonderful. Okay, so let's go back to your early days, childhood, teen years, young adults. Heading into dating and even, you know, meeting your husband. What was your education about sex like? What was your history with sex like? And, you know, if you want to even get into the pre-programmed days with your husband.
Sure. Yeah. So I would say like my early years, I remember the first time that a friend of mine in like, I don't know, like second grade was like, do you know what sex is? It's when you put a and I was like really whispered and stuff like that. And I was like, huh. And then I asked my mom, I was like, that what it is? She was like, yeah. And I was like, okay, cool. And I walked away and like, that was it, you know, kind of a thing. But then in fourth grade, my mom really wanted to talk to me about it. And I remember it was before fourth grade and I walked to the school bus and she was like, hey, she like sat me down before school and she was like, hey, I wanted to talk to you. And I literally was like, fingers in my ears, la, 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 and ran to the bus stop. I like was not having that conversation. And so she had like gotten a book as part of that conversation. And she just like put it on my bed. And like, when I got home, she was like, there's a book on your bed. And whenever you're ready to talk about it, you let me know, kind of a thing. But I was not having it. And you know, you get sex education in school, which is lackluster in the United States. So I knew the basics and stuff like that. But honestly, I grew up during the purity movement, and so we did go to church. I don't feel like I actually got as much purity messaging from my church or my mom or even like my friends, but it was just so prevalent in culture. Like I kissed dating goodbye and all of that stuff was just so like that was the messaging we got. And so even though it wasn't like what I necessarily got, I also felt like that was like the norm kind of a thing. And I even remember one time I was in high school and I went out for ice cream after school with a boy, not even because it wasn't like a date. It was just like hang out, get to know each other. And I was wearing like a tank top with like a built-in shelf bra and like a, you know, a flannel over it because that was the style. And I remember like talking to him at one point, I like had bent over to like take a bite of ice cream and looked up. And he said something about how like, oh, it's really distracting to be able to see down your shirt. And I looked at him and I went, don't look. Like I was so sassy and stuff. So like, I really feel like I owned things throughout high school. Like culture didn't bother me. In college, I had a high school boyfriend that was pretty serious, but in college and stuff, I like dated socially, but not super, you know, I didn't have a serious boyfriend or anything like that. And I've always been really touchy-feely. Like I like snuggling and touching and whatever, like even with my girlfriends, like we'll snuggle up on the couch together or whatever. So, and whatnot. And when I did start dating my husband, well, even before that, so I did have sex before marriage, which, you know, is a no-no, but also you just don't talk about it at church and no big deal or whatever kind of a thing. And when I did start dating my husband, we actually did start sleeping together fairly quickly. But we were in like a pretty committed relationship. And looking after much therapy, looking back, I think the point that for me really sticks out in my mind is, so we were having sex while we were dating. We dated for 1.5 years before we got married. So for at least 1 year. And then right before we got engaged, he was in a church program called Men's Fraternity, which I do not recommend to anybody. And they were big on like men should be the leader in the religious leader in the relationship, and you should be leading your family and blah 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 blah. And also, you shouldn't be having sex before marriage or living together before marriage and blah 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 blah. So he was like, hey, out of obedience to God, and because I feel like this is what I have to do as the leader in the relationship, like I'm putting the kibosh on this. And so we stopped having sex. We wound up getting engaged. We were engaged. We got married. And literally, like I just always say, like that was the turning point for me, because once we got married, it was like I just wasn't into it anymore. Like it wasn't a necessary part of our relationship. It wasn't like how we connected anymore. Like I had like pushed that to the side, and it just never came back. And so I think also, like at that same time, you know, you're going through marriage counseling and stuff like that. And one of the messages that I feel like still I'm having a really hard time with, even in the program, is that idea that like you want a good marriage, and a good marriage is a marriage where you're regularly having healthy sex, right? Or whatever. And lots of messages also just so bad about keeping your hu husband satisfied so he doesn't cheat, so he doesn't look at porn, so he doesn't blah, 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 blah. And honestly, I've never had that specific worry about my husband, about him doing all those things. And still, it's just that feeling in the back of your head. So yeah, so that's kind of like where I was coming into this. And in fact, right before I started the program, I went through what a phase that I like to refer to as Raina's religious rebellion. I don't even remember how it really started, but so a few years before this, even we had done couples counseling, and we got over some big hurdles. And I knew that like sex was a thing we didn't address there, but the fit with the counselor wasn't right. We tried one, like, what is it called? Somatic? No, I don't remember what it is, but where like you intentionally don't have sex and you're just looking at each other, and then you're like touching, but no genitals, and like you build up. And like by step two of that, I was like, this is not for
Sensate
me. This,
focus,
yeah,
sensate focus.
sensate focus.
Yeah.
That's what it was called. Thank you.
Oh, I always hear terrible things about that.
Yeah, it just wasn't what I needed. Like, it might work for some things, but it just wasn't for me. And so we were like, okay, take a break on this. Pandemic's happening. Like, we don't need to focus on our sex life right now, but like, we'll come back to this later. And then I did. I actually got an individual counselor who's a licensed sex therapist. And we started going to couples counseling, and then my husband wound up getting his own counselor too. So we are in therapy multiple times a week in this household, which is great. It's good for all of us. But it that just didn't. I think it was through those therapies that I realized where that break happened for us. But and I feel like you say this in the program too, like knowing what caused it doesn't help you fix it. Like it really doesn't. Like I know exactly what happened. We can apologize and you know, accept and validate and respond all day long about it. And that doesn't make me change how I feel in this moment of, you know, wanting that physical connection. So yeah. I don't know where to go from there, but that's
Oh,
kind
I've
of the
got some
background.
questions. Don't
Yeah, great.
worry. First off, I just want to comment on how unusually healthy your early days around education around sex were. First off, that the first mention of sex was true. It was accurate. Penis goes in the vagina. That's incredible. I mean, good job, whoever told you that.
Yeah.
And then you went to your mom and she didn't get weird about it. She just said yes. Then she tried to have the conversation, but then she listened to you. She didn't push it. And then she put that book on your bed. So incredible. And then also, that even though, yes, it is sort of in the air, the purity culture, that's why people have the same, not the same, some effects of it, even if they weren't in a church environment, if they're around our age. But that, I mean, the comment to that boy that you went out with is fantastic. And also, it made me think, like, did you experience shame when you were having sex outside of marriage?
That's a really good question. Did I experience? I was definitely being told by my pastor and his wife, who knew I was in a serious relationship, like, save that for marriage, like, blah, 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 blah. And I was doing it at the same time. And I was like, yeah, okay, thanks for your advice. Like, I didn't let it make me feel shamed. Like, I did not feel shamed by it at that point in time.
Amazing. I mean, I would love to do a deep dive into your personality, like what, but it does sound like you had some stability with your mother at least,
Yeah, for sure.
which is, yeah, just so beautiful. So were your early experiences positive, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. I waited a really long time to have sex. Like, I was ready when I knew when I was ready, and I was ready when I did it, kind of a thing. Yeah, I feel like they were pretty positive, and I think because I waited so long, and because I'm pretty picky about the people that I hang out with in general. I always felt like I could say, like, yes, no, this far, but no further. Like, I that voice was very confident in me, I feel like. And so, yeah, early experiences were positive. Not, there weren't a ton of them. So I don't know what else to say about that, but yeah, I always felt like really in control of what was going on, and like I could say yes, say no, et cetera.
And did that extend to experiences with your own body on your own?
It's been a really long time since I was that age. So I don't have any clear memories, but I also like I would not have been ashamed to like explore positive sensations on my body or anything like that. That, yeah, no shame there.
Feelings of like dirtiness or grossness with your
No.
genitals or anything like
No.
that.
This might be TMI, but hello, welcome to the podcast. But
Exactly.
like I remember even like as a middle schooler, I used tampons without an applicator. I was real comfortable touching things, getting up in there if you need to get them out, stuff like that. So yeah, I very little body shame in my life.
I also started with tampons with no applicator, and then because that's what my mom used, so
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't give it a
And they fit
second
in your
thought.
purse so much easier.
Yeah, and then I tried a couple times with those silly cardboard applicators. Like, what
Oof.
is this?
No.
You've got all that packaging and then the cardboard's all bloody and it's just like so weird.
The fact that they didn't start testing period products with actual real blood until like just a handful of years ago just blows my mind. I just cannot even. Like,
Seriously, that is wild.
yeah.
Now, so your husband was given the message that, okay, you need to stop. This is what God wants. What do you think was the message he was getting from that group or from the church around after marriage?
Oh, that's a really good question. Okay, so some of the things that I like, key things I remember of us talking about and hearing at marriage conferences and stuff is like, Satan tries to keep you out in to get you into bed before you're married and then keep you out of bed once you are married. That one has been a big one in my life of like, oh, if you're not having sex, it's because there's like Satan's intervention between of your face right now. I wish that your face was on the podcast so everybody could see how shocked you are.
I have heard many messages. I
Yep.
have researched many,
And
and
never that
I have
one.
never heard that one.
Yeah. So they weren't great. And like, and I even feel like, oh my, so this summer, in the middle of my religious rebellion, my church decided to do a book called Passion Pursuit that I am holding right now. You guys can't see it, but literally the entire book is just marked up with red pen. And in capital letters, it says things like toxic, victim blaming, what about Paul? Like all over it. I would not recommend it. Thankfully, it was led by a woman in our church who was able to be like, yeah, that part's really bad, but Why should you have to read around the really bad stuff and recognize that it's really bad? Why can't we just have good education and whatnot? I don't remember where I was going with that, but all of that to say,
Well,
like,
the
church messages not
messaging.
always great. Yeah.
Yeah, the messaging once you became married, because that's where you saw the desire and the maybe even autonomy change for you. And that would
Absolutely.
make a ton of sense if before marriage you were in the decision process. You were saying, okay, thanks for that information, but between God and I'm going to continue to have sex, and that's where I'm going. And then after you got married, now you're inundated with messages of, you must now do it.
Yeah. That I never put that together, but that's great. That really resonates with me, you know? Yeah. Yeah, and I do think that is. Well, there are more toxic cultures than the culture that I am currently in, because one of the things that I always hold fast to is like you don't leave a culture just because it's bad. All cultures are bad. You stay and you make positive change, right? Kind of a thing. So I am still a part of that same church community now and will continue to be for probably a very long time. There's a lot of work that the church can do around messaging of what sex is for and all that good stuff.
And I am so happy that you are in that community, and your fierceness and your truth telling are 1,000% going to impact those people in that faith. And yes, love it. So good. So you got married and desire plummeted.
Tanked, yep.
Yeah. And so how did that impact your relationship? Were you sort of silent about it? Did you fight about it? Did you just kind of acquiesce and do it for the sake of your
Yeah, so I
marriage?
actually have a very clear answer to this, which is I had a mental countdown timer. So literally, and so you know, you would get advice, how often should you be having sex? And the answer that I kind of la landed on was like, weekly is normal. Monthly's okay. Less than that's not really acceptable. I don't know where I got these numbers. I mean, I could probably go find the books later if you wanted me to, but like, I don't know where those numbers exactly came from. But so we definitely had periods in our life where it was more like weekly. We settled into monthly. And then literally, I had a countdown timer in my head. It was like, how long? When was the last time? Okay, round here, I need to care about that again. Hope it's getting to that time. Not looking forward to it, but let's just get it over with so that it's done, kind of a thing. Not to say that I didn't ever enjoy it. Like sometimes once you're there and you get into it and you're like, okay, great. But it was definitely like, yep, this is, it's time again. Gotta get this done. It's on the checklist. Okay, checklist over. Great, move on, you know, kind of a thing. So I would say that is definitely how that like wound up working in our marriage, is just it was like mental checklist. And I'd be like, yep, okay, great. And I will say, to my husband's credit, like sometimes we'd get to that countdown and it'd be like, ugh, I just can't, but like let's talk about this again next week or whatever. And he'd be like, okay, like I didn't feel serious pressure from him all the time. There were times that I felt pressure, like in marriage counseling, when we talked about sex, we talked about how often would you prefer to have sex? And his was like, well, like one or two times a week. And it's like, ugh, that's so much, you know, kind of a thing. So I do, there was some pressure from him unintentionally so. But I also feel like every time I said no, he was respectful of it. But in my mind, I was like, but we also still have to continue doing this. So.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Like, was it all internal or was there some external pressure? And it
Yeah.
seems like a combination, maybe.
Combination of both. Certainly the internal pressure is the one that really I, per my early years, I'm still kind of feisty. And if you tell me I have to do something, I'll be like, no. But if I think I have to do something, it will absolutely get done, you know? I think the internal pressure is greater than the external pressure, but it's not that it wasn't there. It's just it doesn't tend to affect me quite as much.
And so, did that continue for about the 8 years you've been married?
That yeah well yeah that was true. I mean, we're almost 15 years married now,
Oh,
so
15,
that
sorry.
continued for like 13 years of that. And then at one point and then we came back into in like I don't know 2022-ish, I think, is when we started individual therapies. And I started with specifically with a sex therapist. And she was like, I think you might just need to take sex off the table for a while. And I was like, okay. And we have. And it's been nice. It's not quite at like the reset. Like the reset in the program is very different than how we just took sex off the table as like we don't have to every month kind of thing. We got rid of the countdown timer. But it's not quite the same as like the whole reset, which was has been much more productive, I feel like, for us. But yeah, at least it wasn't quite as pressury.
Would you mind sharing the difference between the, and I'll educate a little bit here, but because we have had previous guests talk about the reset. So in the program, the couples who do it don't have sex for 4 weeks after the first week. Yeah. So yeah, do you want to share a little bit about that?
So, well, we came into the program not having had sex for much longer than that and have continued to not have sex for through the program so far. But I feel like the difference is in the like taking sex off the table. What we didn't take off the table was talking about sex or telling each other, like him telling me like, oh, I would really like to do this kind of a thing. And little things that you don't realize are pressure. And so now it's like during the reset, it's like not only was it like we don't have to have sex, but we're absolutely not going to, and I'm not hearing about if you want it or not. And that's been really helpful for me.
Yeah, that subtle pressure is so in the air, and that's why I think a lot of people listen to the podcast, and we haven't talked about safety yet, you know, in our conversation, but it is a theme that we talk a lot about. And so many women will come into the program and say, "Well, I listened to that piece, and I didn't really resonate with it. Like I'm totally safe all the time, and their husbands are saying the same thing. Like I've never pressured my wife, no coercion, nothing." And then yeah. And then you come to find out once you do this exercise that there has been subtle stuff, unintentional,
Yeah, absolutely. And
but
I will
there
say,
nonetheless.
for anybody on the fence about joining the program or not, I listened to the podcast for a while and I was like, oh, I get the gist of it or whatever. Can I say for me, those coaching calls where you hear specific examples and how that's a safety issue or how that's a compassion issue is like what really unlocked everything for me. It's like hearing it in action with the words, with the advice is like what really for me has been made it worth it to be a part of it and go to those coaching calls and stuff like that. I think those are like a key piece for me, which is funny because when I joined, I was like, yeah, I mean, I'll go to a couple and see how they are, you know? And now I'm like, oh, I need a coaching call. So.
Yeah, because it's so ingrained in our culture, these things. And so we can't even see them because it's like we're the fish swimming in the water and we're just like, oh, that's just normal. That's normal. That's normal. That's normal. But then when you really analyze it, you really break it down, and you really start to learn how it feels in your body. You're like, actually, that's never really felt good for me. But then I've always just said, oh, that's me, I'm too sensitive, or that's my trauma, or oh, I have hormonal issues, or I'm a people pleaser. I mean, we hear all these sort of, I have body image issues, all this self-diagnosing that women are taught to do in our culture.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that continued on for the length of your relationship, and then you did some sex therapy and your husband got some counseling. Well, just because I'm curious, since you listen to so many of the episodes of the podcast, and you already were therapied up and you have a lot of re internal resources, it sounds like, what made you want to do the program?
Yeah. So I was, reading books by Sheila Ray Gregoire, I think is her name. And like where it points out the kind of the differences in what we say in church versus what like science tells us. I read Sex, God, and the Conservative Church by Tina Sellers, and now I'm in the middle of reading her Shameless Parenting book, also quality. I mean, I've just been like ingesting information left and right, the good and the bad. Like I said, Passion Pursuit was in there too, so both sides of the coin. And I feel like, although those gave me really good information and let me get mad and recognize that there was a problem, I didn't feel like any of them had great solutions. And even therapy helped me realize where the disconnect started, but it didn't give me great steps to moving forward. So I actually feel like all that time of getting mad, like joining WIM was at the right point. I needed to have that period of just being really mad for a while. If I had done the program back then, I think that I don't think I would have been quite ready. Almost. I think I needed that period of being a little bit mad about things. And then coming into the program, the especially that compassion piece, I already knew why I was mad. And now it's like it makes sense because blah blah blah. And literally I use it makes sense, that compassion word, talking to my son, talking to my the people who work for me, talking to like everybody. I just everything makes sense. Like in the last couple of months, everything is just like, that makes sense. Okay, what are we gonna do about it? You know, kind of a thing. And so I really do feel like this is like the next step in my journey of being able to like move on. I should also mention, so right in the middle of my religious rebellion, I also got very, very anemic, like had to go to the emergency room and get blood transfusions a couple of times, anemic. I had ovarian cysts that were growing rapidly. I always say my body likes to do what it's made for. My uterus was made for growing things, and it was doing a great job of growing things. Unfortunately, they were not babies. Well, not unfortunately, I already have one. I'm good. But and so yeah, I was just losing blood at alarming re rates, and so we did some blood transfusions. I did some iron therapy, whatnot. We couldn't get it under control. I wound up having to have a hysterectomy in December, which is such an experience. It is wild how different my body feels now. And I think this was the right time for the program because I was like, out with the old uterus, out with the old way of doing sex, out with the old relationship, in with being in tune with this new weird body that I have, having my husband help. I remember like when they told me I had to have a hysterectomy and we were talking about it and he was like, is this gonna change sex? And I was like, I don't even wanna think about that. Like, I understand that's what you're worried about, but like, I just wanna have blood, you know, like kind of a thing. And then actually having the surgery and being like, I don't wanna put anything in there. It hurts. It feels weird. This is crazy kind of a thing. And so, yeah, I feel like God, he does his thing. He like puts everything together in the order for you when you need it, the way you need it. And it's just like out with the old, in with the new. Let's try something different. Let's have actual clear steps, not on why you feel like this, but on like what to do with that kind of a thing.
I love that because I do find that women get scared when they feel angry, and they feel shame when they get angry, and they usually the questions they ask me is, how can I stop feeling angry? Could we just pause this uncomfortable emotion, and can I go back to being nice and smiling and kind and, sweet as I'm supposed to be as a woman? And I'll often say that anger is a appropriate response to injustice. And anger is a emotion that moves you into action. And so if you stew in the anger, yes, you will probably get sick, you will probably be miserable, and it won't work very well. But it's just so exciting that you use the fire of that anger to propel you into action. And what a blessing that I get to like support you on your next, your next steps through that, which is incredible. Can we talk a little bit about the hysterectomy? Because I feel like,
Nobody talks about it. I'm a researcher. I want to know what's coming. I was online. I was like, what's going to happen? And there's like zero information out there. So, yes, let's talk about it.
okay, so bring us to, because I'm sure there are women listening right now who are probably facing the decision of getting a hysterectomy, will experience one in the future, or have gone through it and feel really alone. And it'd be just so nice to hear somebody else talk about it. So could you walk us through like maybe first appointments, what you were told, then into a surgery prep, the actual surgery, recovery, and then also now, like you were saying, how your body feels.
Yeah, absolutely. So like I said, I was bleeding heavily. I was actually on the Mirena IUD, which is one of the only things that stops heavy bleeding, and it had worked for me for a little while and then stopped working again. We think it might have gotten like slightly dislodged, or maybe the growths weren't as large, and then once they got larger, it didn't help anymore. Who knows? I actually, before doing the hysterectomy, tried two different medications. One that I want to say like constricted your blood vessels so you would bleed less. That didn't work. One that was specifically for the exact like medical diagnosis that I had. That wasn't effective, and also took a lot of work to get the insurance to even pay for it. So that was really annoying, if nothing else. And finally, I was just like over it. I was so tired, so done being in hospitals like multiple times a month, getting transfusions and stuff like that, was just over it. And so they were like, yeah, let's get you in. My doctor was great. So we actually left my ovaries in. So I still have a cycle, which is wonderful. Not everybody gets to do that. But so it didn't send me into early menopause. So I don't have experience with that. But we took out everything, fallopian tubes, uterus, cervix, and none of that is left there. The science behind it to me is fascinating. I was like, where are my ovaries gonna go if they're not attached to something? She's like, oh, we're gonna like nestle them in kind of down by your hip bones, and they're just gonna like rest in this little cavity area. I was like, what's gonna happen to my actual vagina, the canal kind of a thing? She's like, oh, we tie it off at the top. It's kind of like if you took a tube, and you sew one area at the top so that the part that when you actually go up your vagina and you touch, you're not touching the stitches. The stitches are on the interior of you, but you can kind of still feel like the ridge of the stitching up there.
Like a
And then they
belly
use,
button almost.
oh, say
Like
that
an
again.
a like a belly button, like you would have an umbilical cord, which would be your cervix, and then they kind of tie it off and snip it off.
Not tied, stitched, but still. And then they use the, like, I don't know what they're called, the fibers or whatever that used to hold your uterus in place, to hold that canal in place so it's approximately the same shape it used to be for sexual health and stuff like that. So did all that. I will say the recovery was no fun. I was in the hospital for several days. I would say my recovery was probably worse than most people's. In general, I just had a lot of pain management issues, which I'm still glad I did the surgery, because I would rather take a week of severe pain and whatnot for, versus like a lifetime of all of the other stuff that was going on, right? And then, I talked to a lot of people in my life who had had hysterectomies or knew somebody or whatever, and they're like, yeah, it took a long time to get back to being yourself. And I did not know what that meant, and they couldn't explain it. It's kind of like that thing where it's like, you know, when you're a new mother and you're like, I know you're tired all the time, but what do you actually do? And like, nobody can explain it until you do it. So I'm going to try my best. But also, you just don't get it unless you've done it to some extent. But I will say that, like, so initially there was a lot of pain with movement, twisting was weird, like that kind of stuff was just painful. After a few weeks, I was back. Like, I remember, like, every day I would be able to do something new. Like, I'd be able to walk a little further, or I'd finally be able to bend all the way to the ground to pick something up. And it was just like that slow thing. But also, and I don't know if this is because of the anesthesia or whatever, my brain just wasn't quite the same. Very, again, similar to that, like, new parent thing where, like, it's just a little fuzzy and you can't hold things as easily and whatnot. I don't know. I don't know if it's just me or if that hasn't fully gone away yet, but I do feel flightier, like still, you know, and we're 4 months out now. But yeah, so lots of things like that in the recovery. I would say by like 2, 3 months after, I was back to like most of myself. But even still now, like, I have the coolest looking scar. We had to do it. We had to, they couldn't do it laparoscopically because my uterus was so large. She was like, I would be able to detach it, but I couldn't pull it out you through a different way. So we need to open you up. I was like, okay, fair enough. My scar is actually really cool. I like it a lot. It is a really good scar, and it's healing really well. Like, it's still soft and stuff, so it doesn't bother me. But like around it, the nerve damage is still there. So it's like numb basically on a large section of my stomach right now. And that is slowly coming back. It's like the circumference of it shrinks regularly. I'm like, oh, I can feel a new part of my stomach
Is
today.
it really low down in your, is it like?
No. So my C-section scar is like literally right at the bottom of my belly, and this is about 3 or 4. It's like right between my belly button and my C-section scar.
That's high.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's pretty high. So yeah, so that is what it physically feels like. It's like this like weird, painful, like just uncomfortable, can't move as much kind of a thing. They did a great job with managing my pain with like drugs and stuff, and then I came off of those and that was great. But like also that like brain fog and like mama. And now that it's mostly recovered, I mostly don't notice. I still am not super keen on exploring the area up there yet. I'm not quite ready for that. I've taken a peek occasionally to just be like, what's going on? But I still would rather it just be left alone. It's not that comfortable. The weirdest thing I would say is I actually went for a massage like a month ago, and they did that like bum 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 on your back, and I could feel it. And I was like, please stop. Like it was so uncomfortable. So that what I would say is like the longest lasting part of it that I'm like just not a big fan of is that like weird sensation that you're like, ah, why do I feel you hitting my shoulders like, you know, inside my body? It's just so weird.
That is wild. And yeah, and you've had an organ removed.
Yeah.
I think we don't even really understand what that means when you're a human being to have a large organ.
Yeah. No, it has definitely been. I'm a go, go, go kind of person. I like getting stuff done. I'm still getting stuff done, but I have had to be really careful with myself. I took off almost the whole month of December to recover and whatnot. Like I took off extra weeks from what my doctor said was going to be medically necessary to like ease back in. I've been like, my calendar got cleared until I started the program. I was like, 5 days a week, don't make plans. You can do things 2 days a week, right? Outside of work and having a family, which takes up most of that time anyway, but I wasn't trying to add extra stuff on. So yeah, the recovery process has definitely taught me a lot about like taking the time you need for yourself, compassion piece too. Like the it makes sense that you can't pick something up off the floor. You had a major organ removed. Is literally something I had to say to myself multiple times because I was being so hard on myself about like, girl, just get that thing picked up off the floor. And you're like, I don't want to.
Yeah, and as women, we are taught to endure. I mean, how much pain have you endured through this whole process? And then, yeah, we are taught to sort of bounce back and,
Yeah.
just get back out to the field and do those things and in the kitchen.
Yep.
Yeah, that's so. Has it did it clear up what you were hoping would it would
Yes. So
fix?
yeah,
Yes.
I have blood again. It's amazing. I did not realize what I was missing. Not having blood in my body. I have like actual energy now. I'm a little less foggy and yeah,
That's
feistier.
awesome. Thank you so much for sharing all that, because I know we had a coaching call and we sort of paused and asked you a bunch of questions, and I could see so many women. Just the relief on their faces, that, oh my gosh, finally we're talking about things that really affect us or will affect us in the future. And I hope that we, just through, I think I'm heading into perimenopause. So even just like conversations about perimenopause, menopause, that sort of stuff, we just need more.
I mean, I've been trying to find more information about how do you track your cycle post hysterectomy. And there is like almost nothing out there. The general advice is like basal body temperature, but I'm not doing that every day. I've actually figured out I kept my period tracking app and now I'm tracking the symptoms that I remember from back then. So like if I break out, I'll put it in there. If I'm really irritable one day, I'll put it in there just in case. And I have noticed that I'm still seeing patterns in that. So I'm able to slightly track my cycle that way. But yeah,
Okay,
it's
so
been real
excuse
fun.
my ignorance.
Yeah.
This is kind of embarrassing. So you have ovaries,
I have ovaries.
which means
I'm getting
that.
all the same chemical signals of a cycle. Like my cycle is still intact. I just don't. And my eggs are being released from my ovaries. They're just getting absorbed into my body instead of being released through and out my body.
Right, so the uterus isn't building up that lining, and
Correct.
okay, yeah. Fascinating.
I know. Science is so fascinating to me. I love it.
It's incredible. Okay, so just moving on from that, briefly, what have been some of the big key takeaways that you've had from going through the program? Just because I really do like to have this podcast be an opportunity for those who can't afford it, or maybe their partners aren't on board or whatever, to get a taste of it, to maybe see how they could implement a few things. So there's no secrets. You can share anything that you've learned
Perfect.
here, whatever sort of landed for you the most.
Yeah. So I feel like I've said, keep saying that compassion piece and just having the sentence fragment, it makes sense. It makes sense that when your husband said he wants to have sex more than once a week, you freaked out and thought that that was your responsibility to meet that need. It makes sense that, whatever it is, it's just
You said yes when you meant no.
yes. Yes. Or it makes sense that you have been having sex that you don't necessarily want because you feel like that's what makes you a good wife.
Yeah, and always turning towards culture for those messages. Like you have been taught this, so it
Yeah.
makes sense that you are playing it out rather than sort of a self-diagnosing or like, why am I doing this? Or
Yeah.
what's wrong with me that I'm doing this? Or I must be broken because I'm doing this.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
yet.
So I would say that was the first piece. The second piece, and I already know about boundaries. I mean, the boundaries books, I think I've read all of them. There's like 60 of them, right? And I love them. They're
Sure.
great. But like, I don't know why, but this time around, that really stuck around. It stuck like in this period of my life, that's really been sticking out to me that like a boundary is about what you do, not what about how you want other people to act. And like, what are you going to do when somebody does something that you don't want, right? And then and with that, a lot of my boundaries are actually less about boundaries and more about when you do something I don't want, I am going to actually speak up and say something about it, right? So that just that like empowerment of leaning into your intuition and advocating for yourself, I feel like again, it makes sense that I stopped saying what I want because in the past I had had messages of, oh, I'm giving you a back rub and all you're doing is complaining about it. No, I wasn't complaining about it. I was telling you the way I wanted it. Like, that's different. And now we can like have those conversations with a lot less like fire behind them, I feel like.
Yeah, that just some plain facts that there are human beings and human beings have nerve endings and everyone's nerve endings are different. And we have preferences as human beings on how our nerve endings are touched. It's like plain,
And
boring.
like me saying that I want to be touched a different way isn't saying that you are doing a bad job giving me a back rub. You know, it just means I would have a preference for a different thing. Like, let's utilize this touching to its maximum potential. This is what I'd really like. You're not doing this because you like touching me. Well, maybe you are partially, but like doing
If
this
it's
because
for
you
my
want to be.
pleasure, then let's
Yeah.
make it for my pleasure. Yeah,
Yeah,
let's not mess
exactly.
around with this.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that. Efficiency.
Efficiency and yeah, that is one of my favorite things. My favorite phase in life is make a plan, work the plan. Love a good efficient plan.
That's great. So, how are you doing with the plan that I proposed around exploration dates?
Yeah, I am taking it real slow. Our first exploration date was very short. We set a 30-minute timer. I'm still trying to figure out the whole. I mean, we've got a schedule. We're doing Saturday night when we can. When we can't do Saturday night, we default to Sunday night so that it's on a pattern. My first one was just we went and laid down in the bed. So we put my son on a TV show in the front room, went down, laid on the bed, and I just laid on his chest and we just chatted for a little while. And he had his arm. I was like laying like my head on his chest, like as a like 90-degree angle to him, kind of a thing. And his arm was like over my shoulders. Kind of a thing, like laying on top of me. And at one point, he actually started like rubbing my shoulder. And I was like, oh, that feels good. And he's like, oh, I didn't even notice I did that. And I was like, that's okay. Keep going. It's great. I like that. It's nice and warm and comforting. And I've always said I like active touch. Like, don't just set your hand on me. Like, set your hand on me and like touch, like actively touch me, like move it a little bit. I don't want a dead fish hand. So that was really
I
good.
love you saying that because I'm the opposite. So that is, it's so exciting. Like, it's just so neat how right away we've demonstrated how human beings just have different preferences, and you got to communicate them because you just don't know.
You just don't know. It's true. And then later, like we were still, laying in the same position. A few minutes later, I was like, I wonder what it would be like to touch his shoulder. And then I did, and I was like, I just wanted to like squeeze it. And I was like, I'm gonna squeeze your shoulder. Is that okay? He was like, yeah. And I was like, oh, I like it. Like it's like meaty, like muscly, and it was just really cool. And it's not that I would have never asked him if I could squeeze his shoulder. Like every once in a while, I do this to my son too. I'm like, I'll be like with my son, and I'll be like, I just really want to bite your elbow. Can I bite your elbow? And he'll be like, yeah, sure, here, And then he'll come up to me and he'll be like, I really want to squeeze your nose. And I'm like, go for it. So like, it's not like that is unusual for us. But like, for me in general, but also like with my husband, it was the first time in a long time that I was like really truly curious about like what would it be if I like just squeezed you, like kind of a thing. Like I could feel that like desire coming back to have a physical connection again. And like I said, it is a very low, there were, other people share their XDs too, and I'm like, whoo, I don't even want that yet, kind of a thing. But like even
Yeah,
just
that's
those
not the
little,
point.
yeah, those little connection pieces are just like starting to very slowly build back in. And I imagine it's going to be several XDs before we get past just laying on the bed and chatting or reading next to each other or listening to music or listening to a audiobook or a podcast or whatever. Yeah, I imagine it's going to be a while before we get to just like connecting on that level. But in the midst of it, like having curiosities of like, what's going on with your knee? Can I poke at it? It's just kind of fun too. Like I feel like a lot of that lightheartedness of exploring each other's bodies got lost somewhere back in the days. And
Yeah, and
bringing
all
that
that
back.
obligation
Yeah.
and Satan keeping you out of
That's right.
the
Keeping us out of the
picture.
bedroom.
Yeah, and that's the point, isn't it? The point is to bring back that curiosity and openness, and within the context of safety and no obligation. And it's so hard not to think of it as like a timeline, like this type of pleasure or a hierarchy. Like me squeezing his shoulder is a less valuable type of pleasure than me touching his penis, for example. And that is a really hard mindset to break.
And one of the things I've also noticed about our XDs is I've been needing to ask for a lot of like reassurance in like, are you feeling connected right now? Is this pleasurable for you too? And like, I know I'm supposed to be responsible for my own thing, but I like need that reassurance that like, no, what we're doing right now is also valuable to you, and that we know this is like, years and years of practicing is to, practice doesn't even make perfect in here, right? It's like practice makes it an ongoing practice.
Yeah, it is an ongoing process of learning for really the, and that's what makes it spicy, is the learning piece. And I just will say for those listening, not all men like your husband are in the position where they can actually respond positively to questions like that. Some men, especially if they have porn, affecting their brain, they will usually move more towards, no, I'm not having a good time. This isn't what I want. And unfortunately, shut down the opportunity to explore with them because they're
I
not safe.
very much, I think I even told you this in one of our coaching calls. The first time I was going to ask a question, I had talked to you and I was like, what if I ask him this? And I was like, what if I tell him what I want to hear now is this instead? And that really helped a lot too. And then once he did that, I was like, okay, I think I trust him to just ask questions now too,
Yeah, exactly. That's beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Raina, for coming on the podcast and sharing so courageously, especially your experience, through the church and your, what did you call it? Your
Reina's
religious, re
religious rebellion.
and also your hysterectomy, because that, I don't think we really had a chance to talk about that on the podcast yet. So it's really, really helpful. Was there anything else you wanted to add before we said goodbye?
I don't think so. Thank you so much for
Again?
having me, though. It's been good chatting again.
Yeah, it's always a joy. I love this period of time after the program where I get to have these one-on-one conversations, because in the coaching calls and in our online forum, like, I get little pieces of your story in here and there, but it is just such a joy to, like, spend this whole hour with you, and you know, it's one of my favorite parts of the whole process for me. So thank you for doing it with me. All right, well, thank you to everyone for listening, and I'll talk to you the next one. Bye for now. If you've enjoyed this episode, I have a favor to ask of you. It's really hard to get the word out about a podcast about sex. What would really, really help is if you would leave a rating and a review. And I know that you get asked this all the time in different podcasts, but please, I beg you, it would really, really help so that more women who need this message will hear it. All you have to do is go into your Apple Podcast app. It's the purple icon. And if you go to the podcast page where it shows my face and has a little button that says latest episodes, if you scroll down past the episodes and you get to a section called ratings and reviews, there's a little purple writing thing that says write a review. If you click on that, it will ask you to give it a 5 stars. Actually, you can put any stars, but 5 is what I would love. And put a title and then write your review. Thank you so much for supporting this little venture here. And I really am so grateful. If you are curious about wanting it more and how this program could help you want and enjoy sex more with your husband, and you feel like it may be a great next step for you, you can go to janetdentonhouse.com/wantingitmore to sign up for the wait list, to learn more, to see when we're running our next round. All right, that's it. I'll see you next one.